Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Manchester, New Hampshire last night, seven Republicans held the first full-scale debate of the 2012 elections. They went hard on the hot Republican and Tea Party themes, private enterprise, slashing government, cutting taxes, no abortion, and hammered the current president on everything. Mostly, they kept their powder dry. It's early days, but one of these politicians could well be the next president of the United States. This hour on Point, the Republican field standing up for 2012. You can join the conversation. Are you ready to think about it? Eager? What do you make of the Republican field of contenders? Their message, does the GOP need to go mainstream or stick with hardcore Tea Party principles to win over the American electorate in 2012? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or at Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. There was a big round of introductions last night from the seven on the stage in Manchester, New Hampshire. Let's hear it.
Hello, New Hampshire. I'm Rick Santorum. I served 12 years representing...
Hi, my name is Michelle Bachman. I'm a former federal tax...
I'm Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House.
I'm Mitt Romney, and it's an honor to be back at St. Louis.
I am Congressman Ron Paul. I've been elected to the Congress 12 times.
Good evening. I'm Tim Pawlenty. I'm a husband. My wife, Mary, and I have been married for 20 years.
Hello, I'm Herman Cain. I am not a politician.
A little sound from St. Anselm College there last night in New Hampshire. The seven GOP candidates on the stage there, each giving a little bit about themselves as they headed into this first big full-scale debate. Joining me now from Manchester, New Hampshire, is James Pindle. He writes the Political Scoop blog for WMUR, the ABC affiliate in Manchester, is political director for WMUR.com, one of the sponsors of last night's debate. James, welcome to On Point.
Hi.
From Bethesda, Maryland, we're joined by Roger Simon, chief political columnist for Politico. Welcome back, Roger. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Denver, Colorado, GOP political strategist Mark McKinnon. He worked for former President George W. Bush and 2008 Republican presidential candidate John McCain. He's president of Maverick Media, vice chairman of Public Strategies, Inc., and a contributor to The Daily Beast. Mark McKinnon, great to have you with us as well.
Greetings, Tom.
Let's hear just a little more. Big theme of the night from Romney and from almost everybody was get Barack Obama out, get government out of the economy to a large extent. Here's Mitt Romney going after the number one target, his target, President Obama.
Any one of the people on this stage would be a better president than President Obama. He has failed in job one, which was to get this economy going again. He failed in job two, which is to restrain the growth of government. And he failed in job three, which is to have a coherent, consistent foreign policy.
And here's former Godfather's Pizza CEO Herman Cain talking free trade, free enterprise, accusing the Obama administration of trying to fix the economy the wrong way.
This economy is stalled. It's like a train on the tracks with no engine. And the administration has simply been putting all of this money in the caboose. We need an engine called the private sector.
And one more. Here's Michelle Bachman. She made a pretty big splash last night going after the president, forecasting what we're going to see in the election campaign.
This election will be about economics. It will be about how will we create jobs? How will we turn the economy around? How will we have a pro-growth economy? That's a great story for Republicans to tell. President Obama can't tell that story. His report card right now has a big failing grade on it. But Republicans have an awesome story to tell.
Roger Simon, Mark McKinnon, and James Pindle are with us. James, you were at the hall last night or there in New Hampshire. What did you see?
Look, this is basically an introduction. This is opening day in the New Hampshire primary. We had a number of polls coming out recently showing that at one point 87% had no idea who they're voting for. Then last Sunday it was 74% of likely New Hampshire primary voters have no idea who they're voting for. And overall, this was basically just opening night to figure out who these people are. Mitt Romney, of course, comes into the debate a big front runner and leaves a big front runner.
Roger Simon, Mitt Romney as winner here. He was steady. He didn't get knocked off his polls pedestal. Did he look like a winner?
Oh, I think he looked like a winner. Nobody laid a glove on him, even though they should have tried. Romney has a tendency to get rattled at big moments. His announcement speech in 2008 was the worst speech he gave of the entire campaign that cycle. His big deal speech on religion that cycle turned out not to be such a big deal speech. And I think his health care PowerPoint delivery May of this year was kind of lacking. So there was the chance to knock him off his pedestal last night, but nobody took it, especially the notable failure was Tim Pawlenty, who had attacked him for Obamacare.
Just the day before.
The day before, pointing out how close Obamacare is to Romneycare in Massachusetts. But when it come to, when it came to do it again, when all the lights were on him, when all the cameras were on him during a live national debate, Pawlenty chickened out.
Mark McKinnon, you're the Republican strategist watching this lineup last night, listening, looking at the themes that they're rolling out. How did it look to you? At this point, it's very, very early on, but in terms of the kind of, broad shoulders or candidate scale of what you saw up there, the message that they've got, is it promising for Republicans? What do you think, Mark?
Well, it is early, as we've been saying, but debates are huge opportunities, and there was a huge audience last night. It's a real opportunity for these candidates to introduce themselves, to get their messages out. And it's a one opportunity we have to really move the numbers, and it's all an expectations game. It's how well you perform against expectations. Mitt Romney had the highest expectations, and he met those expectations. He defended himself very vigorously on his health care issue, which has been wrapping around his axle for months, and so he made a very strong impression there. Nailed down his status as front runner, and then Michelle Bachmann, who had very low expectations, exceeded them by a long shot and really launched herself onto the national stage and put in a very credible, very strong performance. So I think Bachmann and Romney very clearly the winners last night. And as Roger was saying, Pawlenty, big loser. He had a big opportunity to take on the front runner and pulled his punch, and it was a big mistake.
Michelle Bachmann announcing last night in the process of the debate that she's filing her formal paperwork for the presidency. Here she is.
I filed today my paperwork to seek the office of the presidency of the United States today.
And going right after President Obama on health care, like everybody else on the stage, here's Michelle Bachmann.
I want to make a promise to everyone watching tonight. As President of the United States, I will not rest until I repeal Obamacare. It's a promise. Take it to the bank, cash the check. I'll make sure that that happens. This is the symbol and the signature issue of President Obama during his entire tenure. And this is a job killer, Sylvia.
James Pindle, everybody's getting used to these, except for those who have been there before, but getting used to these as presidential candidates. There's Michelle Bachmann announcing her hat in the ring there. How did she stand up above the rest last night? What was it about Michelle Bachmann? She's often been written off as kind of shoot from the hip, almost joke by her detractors.
And also Palin light. She wasn't as good as the real deal, but last night she really came into her own, not only just commanding and getting a news cycle out of this in terms of announcing for president on a debate that was largely unmemorable, and I'm going to get fired since we're a debate sponsor on that. she performed very, very well. I want to pick up on something that Mark said, which is how these debates tend to be, it could be, have potential to be conversation changers, or dynamic changers in terms of the campaign. I mean, if you look at this really weird, slow-going campaign, throughout the summer, there were really only three opportunities to sort of change the dialogue. This debate last night, the campaign finance records, which are due next month, and then the Ames straw poll in August. And so if you didn't touch Mitt Romney, he's going to go until next month, probably having even a better month with good fundraising numbers, and no one's really changing the dialogue.
Roger Simon, what did you see in Michelle Bachmann last night? She didn't get more time than others, but somehow she popped. Why?
Well, one of the main reasons is she made no outrageous statements as she has done in the past, and she wasn't questioned about any of them. I'm not criticizing John King of CNN or any of the other questioners. It is extremely difficult to moderate a debate
with seven candidates on the stage. But Bachman has, up till last night, been known for her quotes about the death panels, about how President Obama holds, quote, anti-American views, end quote, and also about how this is a, quote, gangster government. She's been known for the outrageous remark, but she was very measured last night. I placed her second on my scorecard right after Romney, because as your clip showed, she was talking about the economy. She was talking about how Obama has to go, and there was nothing really to attack in any of that if you're a Republican.
Mark McKinnon, what about the center of gravity politically on that stage last night? It was remarkably, it sounded kind of, you know, Tea Party-esque, I guess, and almost without exception. Is the idea of mainstream Republican gone? Is it Mitt Romney? Is it Tim Pawlenty? Or is the field just going to go very, very hard this time on sort of, you know, hardcore Republican themes, nothing in the middle?
Well, Tea Party is where the energy and the fireworks are in the Republican Party, and somebody's going to capture that. Now, there's traditionally three sectors of the Republican primary. There's the establishment conservative, which Romney kind of has wrapped up. There's the progressive Republican, who John Huntsman likely will cover. And then there's the social conservative space, which hasn't been captured yet, and somebody's going to get it. So there's a huge vacuum there, and that's another reason why the Bachman performance was so important last night, and that's why somebody like Rick Perry is looking to get into this thing, because when Mike Huckabee got out and Sarah Palin not in yet, or maybe not in at all, there's a huge opportunity there. And so that's why somebody like Bachman or Rick Perry is going to jump in and fill that space.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the 2012 Republican field of contenders for the presidency, the day after the first GOP debate in New Hampshire. With us this hour, James Pindle. He was there for WMUR, one of the sponsors of the debate. Roger Simon joins us, chief political columnist for Politico. And from Denver, Colorado, Mark McKinnon is with us, GOP political strategist, watching those debates last night, along with a lot of other Republicans, with a very keen and interested eye. It may be too early for you, but from that stage last night, if you weren't watching, the call was very loud and clear. Michelle Bachman said it, Barack Obama will be a one-term president. He is up against a tough economy, and you could feel the Republican appetite very strongly in the air there. It was economy for a big part of the debate last night. Here, Ron Paul was asked if he could give President Obama credit for anything at all on that front.
Has he done one thing right when it comes to the economy in this country?
Boy, that's a tough question. No, I can't think of anything.
Newt Gingrich was there, former Speaker of the House, lost his entire top tier of his campaign just a few days ago, looking a little bit, I don't know, angry, I'd say, last night, but going hammer and tongs at the president on the economy. Here's Gingrich.
The Obama administration is an anti-jobs, anti-business, anti-American energy, destructive force. And we shouldn't talk about what we do in 2013. The Congress this year, this next week, ought to repeal the Dodd-Frank bill. They ought to repeal the Sarbanes-Oxley bill. They ought to start creating jobs right now, because for those 14 million Americans, this is a depression now.
Repeal, a theme from the stage last night. The health care bill, the EPA, Michelle Bachman said, Dodd-Frank, Sarbanes-Oxley, you name it. Minnesota Governor, former Tim Pawlenty, slammed the president for what he called a defeatist attitude, and worse, for thinking America is equal to, not better than, other countries.
This president is a declinist. He views America as one of equals around the world. We're not the same as Portugal. We're not the same as Argentina. And this idea that we can't have 5% growth in America is hogwash. It's a defeatist attitude.
5% annual growth is Tim Pawlenty's solution. Of course, we haven't seen that ever for a real big stretch of years, maybe a little bit just going into World War II. Roger Simon, talk to us about the politics you heard from that stage last night. I mean, this was like be finished with government kind of attitude. I don't know how it compares with what you would have heard from a Republican stage exactly, trying to think back here. I don't know, 4 years ago, 8, 16. But this was kind of knock down government, be done, regulation out the window, laissez-faire, and off we go.
They have to get the incumbent out of office. It's not like running for an open seat. It's not who's best, necessarily. It's, look, the current government is terrible. The economy stinks. It's not going to get better under the incumbent. You might as well really switch horses in midstream and vote for one of us. Mitt Romney, when he said anyone on this stage could be president, that's the kind of nonsense you have to say during debates. I doubt if he really believes that Ron Paul or Herman Cain could be president of the United States. He probably actually thinks there's only one person on the stage who could be president, and that's him. One interesting thing I wanted to say about what Mark McKinnon said, I think he's absolutely correct that there are three wings of the party: establishment, progressive Republicans, and social conservatives. But I'm sure he didn't mean to imply that those three wings are equal in size. The progressive Republican wing of the party virtually doesn't exist anymore. There are no Mac Mathiases or Jacob Javitses or Nelson Rockefellers Republican Party, if to give you three blasts from the past. Or even if you look at people like Michael Bloomberg, who was a Republican only to become mayor and then switched to becoming an independent, or Arnold Schwarzenegger, Republican governor of California, could never have won a Republican primary, became governor in a special election. That wing of the party is gone. The establishment wing exists. But as Mark said, the energy and the numbers, I think, are with the social conservatives, not just with the Tea Party, but bigger than the Tea Party. And that's the force you saw driving the conversation last night on stage.
Mark McKinnon, the number of government agencies, entities, you name it, programs that were just last night that were called on to be blown up was pretty impressive. I mean, the EPA, Michelle Bachmann says get rid of it. National Labor Relations Board, Newt Gingrich says get rid of it. Social Security, Herman Cain says privatize it. Sarbanes-Oxley, Dodd-Frank, out, out, out. Is this Tea Party fodder that will work beyond the Tea Party? Will it even work in the primaries, Mark? Or is that the key?
Well, we'll see. You know, it reminds me of the mid-90s, actually sort of during the Gingrich era, when there was much of that sort of message with tear government down, you know, we're going to eliminate the Department of Education, that sort of thing, that worked for a while. But then voters got very tired of that in 1996, a big rejection, and voted in Bill Clinton. And then when Governor Bush was campaigning, you know, he had a message about compassionate conservatism, and he was talking about a message of, you know, a limited role, but a limited one for government, but an important one, and a very different kind of message. And that's what attracted independents and conservative Democrats like me to support Governor Bush. And I think that's the kind of message the Republicans will need in order to attract independents this cycle. But, you know, it's a pretty dramatic time, and I think we can throw conventional wisdom out the window, and you can see right now the makings of a campaign that was very much like Obama's campaign against President Bush. You know, the Republicans are just going to try and make this a referendum on Obama, and pretty dramatic change, and right now that's working.
James Pindle, how do you see that working in New Hampshire itself, that hard line? There were questions from audience members there in Manchester and around the state. One stood up right there in the hall, said, look, I'm a lifelong Republican, but I'm more of a mainstream Republican. And, you know, can you tell me how we're, and I'm paraphrasing very broadly here, but the gist of it was, how are we not going to have a kind of civil war within our party or appeal to enough people across the political spectrum to win? John King, the CNN anchor who was hosting last night, moderating, turned that to Tim Pawlenty. Here's Pawlenty.
Are you concerned at all about the influence of the Tea Party?
Not at all. I think the Tea Party is a great, great backstop for America. I love it when people hold up this Constitution and say we have to live by what our founders laid out for this country. It is absolutely essential that we have that backbone to the Republican Party.
And forgive me, that's Rick Santorum responding to John King's question there. James, how does that play in New Hampshire? Is that the way to win?
Well, in New Hampshire, it's a bit different than it is in South Carolina and in Iowa, where we have independent voters who are allowed to vote in this primary. What's fascinating to me is you have all these candidates who are appealing to the party base, which here is important, but you have to recognize that there's basically one person, John Huntsman, and maybe to some degree Mitt Romney, who are trying to appeal to 43% of the New Hampshire voters who are independents and who can vote in this primary. So while obviously, you know, social conservatives make up between 60 to 65% of the base in Iowa, the Tea Party is a much bigger deal in South Carolina than it is in New Hampshire, where some of these live free or die mentality or state motto is so ingrained in Republican politics. But you just really, these independent voters are a much bigger factor here.
But are they going to go for a Tea Party line? Because it sounded, to my ear, quite Tea Party from the stage last night.
We didn't. And we have basically four people on that stage who are going for the mantle of the Tea Party leader. We talked before about the three buckets. I mean, I think in this particular situation, we have three different, sort of similar but different buckets. There's Mitt Romney as the front runner. There's whoever's going to emerge as an alternative to Mitt Romney. And then there's going to be sort of a Tea Party leader. And we don't have a clue who that alternative to Mitt Romney is going to be. And we're seeing a big scramble for who the Tea Party leader is. But left unsaid in New Hampshire, anyway, which again is different, is who's going to appeal to that middle and the independents.
Let's look at Mitt Romney and Tim Pawlenty. Pawlenty, just the day before on Fox News Sunday show, had referred to what he called Obamacare, kind of meshing the President Obama's health care reforms with the earlier Massachusetts steps reforms taken by then-Governor Mitt Romney. CNN's John King put that to Pawlenty here, and you know, Pawlenty yes, he finally repeated the phrase, but he clearly wanted to kind of wiggle away from it.
Your rival is standing right there. If it was Obamacare on Fox News Sunday, why is it not Obamacare standing here with the governor right there?
President Obama is the person who I quoted in saying he looked to Massachusetts for designing his program. He's the one who said it's a blueprint in that he merged the two programs. And so using the term Obamacare was a reflection of the president's comments that he designed Obamacare on the Massachusetts health care plan.
Going gently there on Mitt Romney with the Obamacare tag, Mitt Romney said his plan is different because it wasn't made in Washington.
Ours was a state plan, a state solution, and if people don't like it in our state, they can change it. That's the nature of why states are the right place for this type of responsibility. And that's why I introduced a plan to repeal Obamacare and replace it with a state-centric program.
Mark McKinnon, what do you think of the maneuvering on health care and the Pawlenty-Romney dance there last night?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, this was the real opportunity for Pawlenty to take on Romney. He had a national audience. He was on a big stage, and people wanted to see him intersect, which he had called him out on Fox News the day before, which was a good setup. And then he just pulled his punch. And Romney, the biggest issue for Romney to put to rest is his health care issue. And I think he went a long way toward doing that last night. I thought his answer was pretty clear, pretty crisp, very affirmative. And then Pawlenty just missed the opportunity to take him on. And so I think it sends a signal. Not only did Pawlenty miss the opportunity, but I think it sort of gives, first of all, the Romney campaign a lot of confidence coming out of last night's debate. But it also gives them, some psychology that they put this issue behind them because they talked about it on the national stage to a national audience and answered it very affirmatively and, I thought, very effectively.
Roger Simon, where do you see that exchange leaving Pawlenty at this very early date?
It probably leaves him hoping that Romney will name him as his vice presidential running mate, which is the problem that all of them have except Mitt Romney, which is at some point they're going to have to take on Romney directly. They're going to have to take him down, because if they don't take him down, he's just going to walk away with this thing. He's probably going to raise the most money. He has announced he's not going to do the Ames, Iowa straw poll, and therefore gives them a chance to go into New Hampshire 1-0 against Romney, because if Romney really doesn't compete in Ames in Iowa, which goes first, he goes into New Hampshire 1-1. But the other candidates are thinking, can we really beat this guy? We don't want to be too personal. We don't want to attack his plans directly. Not yet. I mean, nobody even mentioned what Republicans dislike most about Romneycare, which is the individual mandate forcing people to buy health insurance. Romney wanted it in Massachusetts, but he says he doesn't want it for the United States.
He got it in Massachusetts, and that stands there, and not doing too badly by recent analysis. Let's get our listeners in here. Chris in Nashville, Tennessee. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just one quick comment.
Yeah.
If this is what it's going to be for the next 17 months of let's bash Obama, and not give us some specifics about how the Republicans are going to do it differently, it's going to be a very disinteresting 17 months because you get tired of hearing the same bash, bash, bash. I want to hear some specifics on what they want to do and how they're going to do it differently than the president.
And, Chris, what if those specifics are essentially privatize, get government out of the way, cut spending, and, you know, it'll all happen?
Well, it's a wonderful dream, but exactly how can they prove that it's going to work if everything is privatized? In other words, I'd like to see some kind of proof on the table other than saying the current president has done it poorly.
Chris, I appreciate your call. We're talking about the Republican field for 2012 emerging last night at its first New Hampshire debate. James Pendle, we've got a lot of response on, along this theme online. Mad Mark says they, Republicans, drove the bus into the ditch once. Now they blame the tow truck driver because the bus needs more work than we had hoped. So they're using myth and magical thinking. They hope they can fan the flames of hope and fear and anger with false promises and lies. I mean, we did have George Bush in office for a long time, just up to the eve of the into the big crash. So, what about Chris's question? Does the, you know, does the bash government go private line work in this stretch of years where the crash is not that far behind us and the country knows who was in charge as we drove there?
Look, anytime you take on an incumbent, whether it's for a city council, mayor, or for president, you have to do two things. You have to convince voters to fire the incumbent, and then second, show that you're a viable alternative. So whether this happens last night, where they're bashing Obama a lot, or whether it happened, frankly, during George Bush's reelection, when John Kerry and Dick Gephardt and Howard Dean spent all of their time bashing George Bush, this is sort of the par for the course here. But of course, when you get down to the general election, they're going to have a different vision. Presidential races are all about storytelling. We didn't hear all that last night. We're hearing some of it from Barack Obama, that he came into office when the economy was so down in the dumps and that they're trying and that he has a story to tell. We're not hearing a lot of stories here from these Republican candidates. But again, this is so early in the race. I mean, Mitt Romney is a 32-point winner up here right now in New Hampshire, leader in New Hampshire, largely because his competition is so completely unknown.
Mark, you talk about John Huntsman, Sarah Palin. What do you think about last night's performance? Does it make them more likely to end up in this race or less?
Oh, I think it makes them more likely. I think they see a huge opportunity. I think they see the field winnowing down to, I mean, really just to see that it's a Romney, now Bachman, getting a lot of attention, but I think that they can see that they can be the alternative, and that there's huge opportunity. So let me just address the caller's question. You know, I think there have been actually quite a bit of specifics and quite a bit of them last night, particularly this early on. And in fact, a lot of what Republicans are getting criticized for is being too specific too early. And, you know, look at the Ryan plan that the Republicans put out, which was very, very specific, very bold. And so I think, contrary to conventional wisdom, actually Republicans have been very forward-leaning in the kind of ideas that they're talking about to reshape entitlements and to talk about reforming the tax code and a number of other ideas.
Does Michelle Bachmann coming out strong in her way last night make it harder for Sarah Palin, though? I mean, she is not that unlike Sarah Palin in some ways, and she's already in there.
I think so. I think absolutely it does. And I think that it was very interesting that Michelle Bachmann hired a campaign manager a couple of weeks ago, Ed Rollins, a very well-known guy that worked for Reagan and for Ross Perot. And he, I think he spoke something out loud he didn't intend to when he pretty sharply criticized Governor Palin with a real shot across the bow. So if Palin doesn't run, you know, she's very close to Rick Perry and has endorsed Perry in his run for governor. And
Bachmann did.
Palin? Sarah Palin did.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a dynamic setting up there that if Rick Perry runs, and, you know, that there'll be a fight between he and Bachmann, particularly in Iowa. And if Palin doesn't run, you know, because of this dynamic setting up, you could see how she might look favorably on a Rick Perry candidacy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the 2012 Republican field of contenders for the presidency. The day after the first GOP debate in New Hampshire, James Pindle is with us from WMUR in New Hampshire, one of the sponsors of the debate last night. Roger Simon is here, chief political columnist for Politico, and Mark McKinnon is with us. GOP political strategist, has worked with George W. Bush, John McCain, president of Maverick Media, contributor to The Daily Beast. Let's talk about Newt Gingrich for a minute. He had his entire top-level staff, a lot of people, just walk off the job just days ago. Say, you know, he'd been out sort of on a cruise in the Greek islands instead of campaigning, had his misstatements, his $500,000 credit line with Tiffany, talked about right-wing social engineering in comments on Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan's plans for Medicare and the budget. Last night, he was looking to explain himself, saying it's social engineering if you try to ram policy through government without getting the American voter on board.
If you're dealing with something as big as Medicare and you can't have a conversation with the country where the country thinks what you're doing is the right thing, you better slow down.
Mark McKinnon, what did you see in Newt Gingrich last night?
Well, you know, Gingrich always has intellectual heft, and you know, I thought he was you know, classic Gingrich, kind of the professor, had a lot of interesting things to say. But there's also just the sense that he's past his sell-by date. You know, I don't get any sense that he's going to really be a player in the nomination. I think he may hang in there to save face. And to keep his fees up, but it'll always be interesting. It'll always be dynamic, and it'll often be controversial. But he's not. His campaign is completely dissipated. He's not going to put together a ground game or a real campaign. But he'll continue to be an intellectual force.
Herman Cain had impressed some folks in early appearances last night. He got hung up on this earlier comments to the effect that he would not appoint a Muslim to his cabinet. Here he is responding to questioning on that front from CNN's John King.
First, the statement was, would I be comfortable with a Muslim in my administration? Not that I wouldn't appoint one. That's the exact transcript. And I would not be comfortable because you have peaceful Muslims and then you have militant Muslims, those that are trying to kill us. And so when I said I wouldn't be comfortable, I was thinking about the ones that are trying to kill us.
James Pindle, this was out in very unfamiliar territory for a presidential debate, calling out a group of Americans saying they would not sit in the cabinet. Mitt Romney responded saying, you know, we have a tradition of being open to all here. But what about Herman Cain and that last night, James?
Look, here's a guy who's been taken off in the last couple of weeks. I mean, you have him in second place in Iowa, second place in a national poll over the weekend, and we want to take him seriously. And so some of the words and some of the phrases he said, it's just been now beginning to get some attention. We wanted to ask him about it. Running for President of the United States is a serious job, and he did get hung up on a number of these questions. I think he actually lost a lot of momentum last night.
And here's Ron Paul on what he would do with America's soldiers abroad.
I'd bring them home as quickly as possible, and I'd get them out of Iraq as well, and I wouldn't start a war in Libya. I'd quit bombing Yemen, and I'd quit bombing Pakistan. I'd start taking care of people here at home because we could save hundreds of billions of dollars. Our national security is not enhanced by our presence over there.
Ron Paul has been on that theme for a long time. Roger Simon, Mitt Romney also last night talking about getting out of Afghanistan as soon as possible, of course, subject to commanders in the field. But what about Romney with that note, Roger?
I think Mitt Romney can read polls, and not just the ones that he's taking, but the ones that the media have been taking, indicating I think it was 72% of Americans want to get our troops out of Afghanistan sooner rather than later. We have achieved our purpose. I think most Americans believe in decimating Al-Qaeda. That was our stated purpose for invasion, and now we're just nation building, which is going to be very, very tough in Afghanistan. As for Ron Paul, what people tend to get shocked about when they hear Ron Paul talk is they forget that he's a libertarian. He believes not just in small government, but in virtually no government whatsoever. Which is why when you ask him about heroin, he says, sure, legalize heroin. Why not? Foreign troops abroad, we don't need foreign troops abroad. Libertarians simply believe, they're very close, although they would probably disagree, they're close in some respects to anarchists. They don't believe any government is the answer to most problems.
You know, James Pindle, in past years, that has sounded really out on a limb. It didn't sound quite as far from the center of the crowd there on stage last night as it did in past years. That libertarian theme was ringing pretty strong and all.
It is. It's one of the things that's really coming through sort of the Tea Party, but also this is obviously a big strain in New Hampshire. But I think the foreign policy questions were really fascinating last night, particularly when it came to Afghanistan. I don't think we really have a united Republican message on it. Of course, no one's really quite sure what we're doing in Afghanistan and what the strategy is in general. You've even seen the administration changing their minds what they're going to do with it. But I think it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch out and how this plays out in the next coming months.
Let's get a caller here, John in Amherst, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the amalgam in the GOP between the social conservative slash religious right and the big business slash Tea Party economic freewheelers in the Republican Party. Is there some danger that the Tea Party slash big business wing will push things so far that the people who are actually reading their Bibles and looking at passages about taking care of the poor and the sick and being good stewards of the environment have to part ways with the big business and no regulation end of the GOP?
Boy, I don't know. Mark McKinnon, what do you say? Is there a tension, that tension or other, between the social conservatives and kind of all-out, let's-go business crowds in the GOP today?
The Tea Party's been pretty effective in the last 6 months or so, really broadening its message. And, you know, they got sort of a constitutional framework, which was really smart because that became a really unifying theme, not only for, you know, economic conservatives but social conservatives. So they've actually done a pretty good job of broadening the platform. And, you know, the recent news on the economy, which is continues to be bad, but it also showed that for the first time, there really is, it appears to be research demonstrating that Republicans could actually win this thing, which is highly unconventional. You know, only one Democrat running for re-election in history has lost, one Democratic president, not many Republicans either. Being an incumbent president has huge advantages. But it's just within the last month that Republicans have really begun to believe that they can actually win this thing. So, you know, with winning comes, you know, a lot more tolerance for different points of view.
Roger Simon, how do you read that? I was listening. We heard Jake Tapper, everybody did, a couple days ago on ABC, I guess on Sunday. And he's quoted saying, of course, follows the White House correspondent there. He says there's an understanding in the White House that there will be a formidable Republican opponent. The way they see it is President Obama got every break he could possibly get in 2008, and still 47% of the country voted against him. They do not expect that 47% to go down. They think it will go up. Could be a 1 or 2 point race, and a lot of it now hinges on the economy. That, you know, if you frame it that way, it looks like a very tough challenge for the president. But then it depends who's up against him and what they have to say, Roger.
Absolutely. It will be a tough race. It will be a tougher race than the last one that Barack Obama ran. But there's an old saying that you can't beat somebody with nobody. You can't beat Barack Obama with a statistic or with an unemployment number. You're going to have to beat him with a Republican candidate who can exploit that, who can persuade the American people that he or she is a reasonable alternative and pass sort of an optical test that everyone has consciously or unconsciously in imagining that person, that Republican, behind the desk in the Oval Office, making life or death decisions, sending our troops overseas, getting people unemployed or not getting them unemployed, or perhaps even worse, should there be some huge foreign crisis. The Republicans have to come forth with a credible candidate to beat who, let us keep in mind, is a terrific campaigner. Barack Obama is a natural campaigner. He faced a tough opponent in Hillary Clinton, and he beat her before he had to go on to win the presidency.
You don't beat somebody with nobody, but then there were seven standing there last night. Kevin in Saugus, Massachusetts. Kevin, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
No one was watching the debates last night, at least not anybody that was a hockey fan.
Not many yet, that's for sure. Go Bruins.
But I am one of those New Hampshire independents. I'm driving on my way to work, and my question for all the Republicans would be that every 10 years Wall Street melts down. We've seen junk bond failures. We just saw the mortgage failure. And they want to, you know, less regulation. How does that help me, who's lost a pension due to a company's Chapter 11 bankruptcy? How are they going to destroy the social safety net that's going to help keep me, you know, from living in a single wide in Arkansas? That's my question.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm so glad you called. James Pindle, I mean, how do you look at that side of it? I'm looking at commentators here. David Brooks, conservative with the New York Times. He's looking at both parties and saying, you know, things look pathetic. The programs are so unimaginative. We've got a national decline to work about. Brooks goes after Democrats and Republicans, but he says the Republican growth agenda, tax cuts and nothing else, is stupefyingly boring, fiscally irresponsible, and politically impossible. He writes, gigantic tax cuts might boost overall growth, but they would do nothing to address the structural problems that are causing a working class crisis. You hear Kevin, an independent from New Hampshire, speaking, asking about that right there, James. What about that?
Well, look, it feeds right. We had Robert Gibson at the station this morning. I did for an interview, and it was so easy for him to go right back into the see, these Republicans are going right back to the George Bush playbook of cutting taxes and cutting taxes and doing nothing else. It's easy for them to tell the story of what they're trying to do, and it feeds into the narrative of where Republicans are, which is this unimaginative thing. I must also say that you've noticed this tension, at least I do with my New Hampshire delegation, the Republicans that are up there, a difference between just the cut everything, cut all taxes, but you have some candidates saying cut all corporate taxes, and then this tension of we need to do something about the national debt, which of course would require you to have taxes or obviously cut spending at the same time. So you're seeing that tension playing out. Maybe it's among the elites and the grassroots, but it is definitely there.
Mark McKinnon, do you still have believers in that path? You know, looking at that Times op-ed page, Nick Kristof at the other end of it, you know, he wrote a few days ago, said, you think about a country with, you know, super low tax burdens, limited government, very few regulations, high patriotism, big military spending. That's Pakistan. Do we want to be Pakistan? Is the message on that stage last night going to hit Americans that way? Is there still a big enough crew that's going to believe in the, you know, cut and win strategy, Mark?
Well, I think we've got to do better and we've got to do more, and I completely agree about David Brooks. I wish we could just run him for president. I think there's got to be something transformational and fundamentally different that either party has got to put forward as a platform and ideas, because we are facing challenges that are so historically profound. And that's why I think, you know, and you look at the support for either party has diminished to historic lows. I mean, support for the Democratic and Republican parties are around 22%, and the support for independents has grown enormously. So there's still a real opportunity out there for some sort of third-party movement as well, and an alternative. People are looking for something really different.
Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, and Ryan. Ryan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
How's it going, guys? I just had a couple points I wanted to make. I found it interesting that I'm from New Hampshire. I'm actually on my way driving to Colorado. I wish I could have been there for the debate. But I just wanted to point out that when Ron Paul originally started the Tea Party movement as a candidate for president in 2008, he was the official leader, and the Tea Party movement was sort of hijacked away from him and directed towards the establishment Republicans. And I find it interesting that we went from the establishment Republicans rejecting the philosophy of the Tea Party into now having two or three candidates that are part of the Republican Party actually competing with each other inside of the party to be the leader of that sort of voting bloc. I find that pretty interesting, and also I just wanted to point out that I think that Ron Paul gets a lot of slack for, you know, for his libertarian views and the fact that, as a friend said, it almost anarchist. But I think the average sentiment of people that are in my age bracket that might not necessarily vote definitely follows the line of what Ron Paul is thinking. So I think it'll be pretty interesting to see how the voters turn out for the Tea Party and how the young people turn out for Ron Paul.
Ryan, I appreciate your call. Roger Simon, as the Tea Party, in some way, young as it is, has it won, looking at the messages that we were hearing last night?
I think to some extent that is correct. I think the Tea Party and the dynamism of the Tea Party, bringing some energy to a party that, after all, seemed to be just drifting for the last few years, has had a real effect. I think every candidate in the race will want to capture some of the Tea Party voters, and the Tea Party is, as I think a Mark, or maybe it was James, pointed out, or maybe it was you, Tom, it started out largely as having an economic, not a social message. The Tea Party was about small government, low taxes. It really wasn't about abortion or gay rights. Republicans recognize that if they can stay on an economic message, they might get more voters than if they are forced off of that into a social message.
Mark McKinnon, we've just got half a minute. What's the timetable? If there's going to be a John Huntsman or Rick Perry from Texas or Sarah Palin in here, when might we see that?
I think the calendar is completely different. Just throw it out the window. I think anything could happen at any time. Yes, it's conventional that Mitt Romney is the front runner in Iowa, but as James will recall, that was the same position that he was in 2008. And he's got nowhere to go but down in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire loves to upset the conventional wisdom, as I remember in 2008 with George Bush. So somebody like a Rick Perry or even a Rudy Giuliani may still get in this thing. And I think that they can even get in late. Money doesn't mean as much as it did before with the technology and the tools that we have today. So it's going to be a fun year for you all and for people covering this race, because I think there's a lot of changes to come.
More to come. The first full-scale swing at it last night there on the stage in Manchester, New Hampshire. Mark McKinnon, GOP political strategist with Maverick Media Public Strategies. Mark, thanks so much for being with us today.
Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Roger Simon, chief political correspondent for Politico. Thanks for your thoughts, Roger.
Thank you, Tom.
And James Pindle in Manchester, New Hampshire with WMUR there. Thank you for joining us, James.
It's an honor.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.